Interesting episode today with Coach Lima. Always a good one, of course, every Friday this year with Coach. Today we discuss the emotional side of KF and how that affected the length to which he kept Cade as QB1. Interesting insights from a coach that was under Coach Ferentz, as well as myself. And then we dive into some extra responsibilities of a strength coach. What does their job totally entail? Let's have a day. Let's go. Guys or coaches wearing stuff and you're like, came in at the wrong time.
Bro, I saw Seth at Bluebird earlier this year and he was wearing a hoodie and I almost jumped him for it.
Yeah. I just had to leave him in the like, alley, take the sweaty.
And I'm gonna need you to let that go.
That's mine now. Yeah. That's mine now. I thought that these were sick, and I get compliments on this one all the time. This was one of your guys's.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Because you guys designed, you guys had a hand like occasionally in designing some of our gear.
Anytime that it said, like, you have the Iowa Strength logo right on the pocket in the middle. So yeah, those came from us. Any of the t-shirts. This one right here, I mean, this is a straight ripoff of the USAPL logo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's just USAPL. But
yeah. Hey, it's a copycat league, man.
It all is. Coach Ferentz told me one time, he said, music and football, there's never an original thought.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, you're right. At least the derivative, everything is a derivative of something.
Because we were talking about how, like, country music, they were remixing songs. And I was like, but if, like, a rapper or anybody else does it, they're like, they kind of get made fun of, like, not being original. But I'm like, you're listening to country guys remake a rap song or something. And it's like, oh, that's hip. It's like, wait a minute. It don't go both ways there.
It is hard to have like an original thing. The best designs, I mean, even like for like the, in the content game, you know, like right now, the way I craft like our thumbnails or like our Instagram posts, like when I make them, I'll just go to like my favorite podcasts or my favorite people. I'm just like, I'm just going to do what they do.
That's smart. You know? That's what I do, something very similar.
Yeah. It's all the same stuff. So yeah, I see some of the clean, like, black warm-ups that the guys have now, or like some of their like jackets that they get. I'm just like, God, man, they're just, that's not fair. I will say this. Actually, I don't think I've ever showed you this feature, Justin, on the old, if you want to join the walk-on store, look at this little on the corner.
Whoa.
You can just QR code that boy right there. You can go get yourself some sweet merchandise. Not as cool as what the boys are wearing, but maybe the walk-on should start making, we should just start ripping off the football.
Just start ripping them off.
Put our logo where the Iowa football logo is, and we'll just take that. We can do
Ironside. Ooh, wow.
Goat Wallace tri-blend short sleeve.
You can put it right there.
That's right there. Awesome. Known for great DT shirt.
That's sensational.
And here's what we've got, something special is if anybody's subscribed to the Patreon on the walk-ons, we're so thankful that you are. If you are, this is a little sneak peek of, let me see if I can find, oh wow, it's not going to let me share that tab. That's bullshit. Let me do this. We have a cool little Carhartt, very, very high quality.
Oh wow.
Wash up walk-ons hat coming for this Christmas. Keep your head warm with the walk-ons. Justin and I know everything about that.
We need it as much as we can.
So just a little cool little ditty to start the show. I want to start with this. First of all, what'd you think of the game this past
week? Oh, so good to see. So good to see them win big like that. Like, that was awesome to see. Still cautiously optimistic when you don't. You know, the numbers throwing are still not what you want, but you're just happy to see a good win and put two in a row.
The dominance in the run game is
so nice to see as a strength coach.
Them boys were moving people now.
Yeah.
Especially against Wisconsin, and I guess it maybe answers the question that we asked on this show last Friday, trying to figure out, is Is this fickle led Wisconsin, this new era 2020s Wisconsin, still gritty?
I don't think so.
Do they still have that kind of that toughness, that meanness that Wisconsin brought? The game result, and just not even the result, but the way they play would tell me no.
Did you see that one statistic in the beginning of the game where I think they had thrown the ball twice as many times as they ran it? And it was like in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Like that's just.
That's not Wisconsin.
No.
And it's not that it has to be, right? But when you're answering the question, are they what they used to be? The answer is no, they just aren't. Man, I used to stand down on the sideline where the specialists were on the 25-yard line and just watch those offensive linemen play after play after play, just road grade people. Like, I would just look at our D line and be like, man, we're getting killed out there. Like, our linebackers are just, Wisconsin's known for like double pull, bringing guys through the hole, like just absolutely, they're bringing the house. They're bringing semi trucks through there. Mm-hmm. And then they usually have the running back like Caleb Johnson to back it up. And it's just like, okay, well, we're not stopping this offense. And it's just not the same anymore. And from our side of things, it's great. It's good. It's good to beat Wisconsin by 30. I never did that. Never did that. But this, we ran the numbers on the recap show. That's three of the last three, four of the last five.
That's awesome.
I mean, that's dominating. That's dominating for half a decade in a border war right there. So
that's awesome.
Heartland Trophy spent a lot more time in the building the last few years than it did while I was there. The Brendan Sullivan experiment going well.
Yeah.
I want your opinion on this. This has nothing to do with strength conditioning, but you were around KF for a long time. You know KF more than most people do, like I do. Obviously, the biggest question right now is like, well, if we would have had Brendan Sullivan in there from the beginning, da 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 da. And there's like, there's two sides to the argument. I think there is, we talked about on our show maybe a month ago, probably like it might be time to give him a look, give him a series like they did, like they planned on last week, and then Cade got hurt and he just took everything. How much does KF have a soft side to, Cade's been injured. We want to see what he can do. We brought him in. He's been the leader of this team. He's voted a captain. It's non-zero, right? It's not absolutely zero because KF is absolutely a player's coach for a reason. And I think it would be dumb to try and defend him as like, no, he's not emotionally attached to his players at all. But then also see him crying in the locker room and like Yanda is the captain, the honorary captain this weekend. And
he
was last weekend.
Oh, he was. Oh shit. Game. Really?
And they came off the field for the coin toss and he gave coach a big hug and said, I love you to coach. Like as the game's about to kick off.
Yeah.
And coach damn near cried before kickoff.
What? That's awesome.
It's awesome. And I love that about coach. And you don't find that anywhere.
No.
Like there's not coaches that are or players that are that emotional about the game and the relationships they have anymore in college football. There's not enough time. Coaches and players aren't in a place long enough to build those relationships. But you find that at Iowa. You've got it at Iowa. So it would be dumb to say that coach has a non-zero emotional attachment. So I, as a biased KF lover, it's an interesting sort of like internal question that I try to answer when people point out that like, oh, he's just too emotionally attached to Cade. They went and got this guy. Everyone was yelling, we need somebody different than Petrus or Deke. Oh, we finally got, coach and the staff and Tyler Barnes. They all go out and get this guy from Michigan, Cade. He comes in, he earns the respect of his teammates. He's voted a captain. He's got a lot of swagger and confidence off the field. He comes in, he gets hurt, tears his ACL again. He's got, he's given his all to the program. How much emotional attachment do you think KF has to a situation like that? And does that bleed into, we probably should have given the second guy a chance a week or two? Do you buy into that at all?
I do. And I would also caveat it with, you can't bring in the other kid too early because, again, Coach Ferentz, he said it even, I forget what game it was. He's like, you know, Cade's coming back from, you know, getting live reps. And that is true. And you can't have somebody be on a short leash and do what they do well. You have to let a kid play. And so to think that he should have, you know, been replaced after 2 weeks, no, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, like you could start to talk about it. And then eventually you do make the change. Like now you don't almost even have to really have the conversation. It's like, no. Hey, the team's going well. Like, listen, you're a great kid and we gave you your chance. But at the end of the day, especially now with the NIL money, like your job, you can be a great person, but your job is to help put points on the board. And you're not the best option for us right now. I apologize.
Your role changes.
Correct. Like, again, you can be a great person. You can do all those things. And everything that you just said was true. Yes, he came in and he transferred and he earned the respect of his team and he's got the swagger off. Fine. But on the field, the results are struggling. And you, as the CEO of the team, you have to make the best decision. And so I think that's what they'll do. I have no idea. But yeah, to think that KF isn't emotionally attached to a kid that, you know, came in and earned the respect of his team and wanted to be a leader, 100%.
Yeah. It's tough. That's a really tough spot to be as a coach. Like, I mean, yes and no. It's a great spot to be. Like, again, like I said, I would rather have a coach who's emotionally attached to his players.
Correct.
But you still have to be, like you said, you still have to make those CEO decisions.
Yep. And that's where it's like, you don't, it's not a, what's the word? It's not cognitive dissonance. It's not like, oh, if this, then that isn't true. It's like, no. You're still a great kid. We love you. You can be a captain. Like,
yeah.
You said Kevin Ward was a captain, but he was only on special teams, right? Sure. He was on every special teams, but he wasn't, you know, on offense or defense, you know, making the highlight plays. You can have somebody that's a, you know, a captain that has great effect on the team that isn't the best player, which is one of the best parts about Iowa is you guys actually respected those core players, regardless of the position they played, regardless of anything. If you were a good person that did things the right way, you guys voted them as captain. And so I don't think Cade shouldn't be the captain and Sullivan is the captain. No, but in terms of who gives the team the best chance to win, because I remember Phil even talked about this, once we went from Rudock, like there was this between Rudock and Beathard in 14.
Yeah.
And, you know, Phil was like, man, when you have to defend a quarterback that can run and throw the ball, like it truly is that extra person that can do, you know, you have to consider that. Like Cade's not going to pull the ball and run the ball. If he does, it's by mistake.
What's really tough is again, another thing where you have to consider the entirety of the situation. I think Cade, when he was healthy, pre-knee stuff, from what I've seen with his Michigan clips, and even like a little bit of stuff, like when his leg has truly felt 100% at Iowa, he's not an immobile guy. But no. He isn't like Brendan Sullivan, where he's like, you can almost like see when Sully, they call him Sully, so I'm going to call him Sully, when Sully plays, he almost is just itching to pull that thing. Like
itching to get hit. He's the running quarterback. He's like, let me get hit. Like, and he even said it in that post game thing. He's like, hey, I got my first hit on the first play. And it was like, and it's the same thing in fighting. Yeah. Like anytime I go and, you know, you're sparring and you get that first punch to the face, you're like, all right, now we're in it. That's Sully. You can tell.
Quick tangent, by the way, got contacted by one of our listeners, a very, very loyal listener, longtime listener.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Said that he rolled with you last week and was surprised how big you were.
We're in the middle of, we're getting ready to roll. And he's like, oh, what do you do? I was like, oh, I'm a strength coach. He goes, are you Justin Lima? It's like, you should not be. Like, how?
No. That's like, weird.
I am, but how do you know?
it's that walk on brand. We're just everywhere, you know?
Amen.
He's like, man, I was surprised how big and strong he was.
Still getting it, brother.
Funny as hell. How tall are you?
I'm just a hair under 6'3" and I'm 255.
Must be nice. and 5'10" just killing me. yeah, it's something about, so like he played. It is true. It was the same way for me even, like, and I didn't get hit a lot, but like that first snap, that first punt snap, you go out and then you snap the ball. You start to cover and you get engaged a little bit by a guy who's always a better athlete. And it's like, okay, now we're playing now. Now we're, and it like, you there's something about feeling the flow of the game. It is true. And I mean, it's 100%, right? Like I think there's the other side to it as well. Cause when people argue like, oh, it's so much harder to defend a guy who can run and throw. Yes. However, there's still a place for guys who are absolute, just pure pocket passers. Because if you look at guys, Tom Brady, for example, bad example, cause he's the GOAT, but Tom Brady, when you have a guy who's so good at timing and checks the line, Peyton Manning, guys like that, who they're not going to beat you with your legs. They're not even a threat, but they're so good at the passing side of things. There's a reason for that too. There's a scariness to that as well. It's like, oh, no matter what defense we play, they're going to find the soft spot, right? So the problem is Cade and his passing ability is not, and his control of the offense, it's not at that level where it overrides somebody who might be maybe a little worse passing. Brennan looked okay passing to me, 7 of 10 this past weekend, but it won't override his ability to pull it down. And I mean, he took a 15 yard penalty or whatever, which took away from some of his stats, but he had like 9 rushes for 54 yards. He's averaging like 6 a carry.
That tush push was dope. What he jumped
just
over.
Just jammed him in.
Like, you know, like that was a good, well executed.
Nate Stanley sneak coming back.
Nate Stanley. Oh man.
King of quarterback sneaks.
Amen to that.
We have not quarterback sneaked it enough as of late.
Well, it's gotten harder with somebody like that isn't able to kind of take it up over the top or, yeah, you know, go to the B gap or shoot, even extend it to the C gap. Those kind of like muddle sneaks.
Caleb Johnson's the best running back in the country.
Facts.
I would like to see him lift weights.
I wonder what it looks like too. I'm legitimately curious what training looks like in there right now. I really hope that. I would just like to see what goes on in there. It'd be interesting to see.
He's built like a truck.
Yeah.
And
he's so tall. That's the thing that I keep seeing is just how tall he is. Like,
he's so smooth. You're not supposed to be that smooth when you're that thick and big. Like when he runs, his head doesn't move.
Which is how it's supposed to be, man. Everything we've ever talked when we do max velocity running or any of that is it's neck down is stiff, but up top is smooth. Smooth is fast.
And he is that. He is like textbook. He's the kind of guy that you would throw like on a PowerPoint if you're giving a strength conditioning presentation. Like, you want to see a guy run right? It's this guy.
Yeah.
And you
can tell how much, like, from what it looks like he really loves his teammates and his own, like, they just have so much fun, which is how it's supposed to be. And like, for me personally, being a former offensive lineman, like seeing the bond that they have, it brings me back to what I had with the running back, Bruce. And I love seeing the lineman, like actually going and picking Caleb up because like, that's your running back. Like you love seeing that pride.
It's fun to see it go both ways where the line is dominating and it helps Caleb. And then Caleb does some things that help the offensive line a little bit because they help each other.
Yep.
And then, the celebration and just the love for each other is fun. On this week's docket, I wanted to ask you some things that are jobs of the strength coach that aren't necessarily obvious under the title of strength coach. And maybe they are. Maybe your opinion will be, yes, this is something the strength coach needs to do, or no, it is not. And maybe you have some thoughts of your own. But the first thing that came to mind is like the Northwestern strength coach with his shirt off. No. Hype man. Is that the job of the strength coach, or where does that fall? How much of that should a strength coach worry about as a responsibility of like getting the players juiced? Like, and when does it go over the top? Obviously shirt off, fucking chest bumping people as they come off the bus at the stadium is cross the line. But where does it cross the line on the other side of like, you do nothing to hype up the players. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's somewhere in the middle. And as the head guy, what you can do is you can try to empower not even your subordinates, but like the players that aren't playing to be the hype men. So like, hey, if you're not playing, like, sure, you can be the ones that gets the crowd involved in the game or does things of that nature. So you can manifest it that way. That's number one. And then number two is just being truly authentically passionate. Like, back to Wisconsin in 15, like CJ got hit late out of bounds and I'm like losing my mind on the sideline at the ref. And it's like, does that help part of the game? Yes, I do believe in, you know, when a big play happens and you're genuinely excited, like, so it shouldn't be fabricated. It should just truly be authentic. Like it happens now with Centennial. Like we got one of our guys late hit. I don't think it was your brother. It was like one of the running backs. He gets hit late out of bounds and I'm like running on, or like, what the heck? You know what I mean? Like, so that authenticness, it's not written. It's one of those unwritten rules, but yeah, we talked about it before. The strength coach, you're the heartbeat of the team. Like when the boys see you care about them, it goes far. Now I say all that and it's a dichotomy because you can get upset really quick in the moment. Oh, it's a late hit. Hey, they don't call the flag. You have to flip the switch and be like, next play, and be the calm head about it. Because if you're just
at some point, you become the distraction.
Correct. You can be a distraction, but at the same time, you can be like, you can help reinvigorate the guys. And if you're just a mute that has no emotion, yeah, you're definitely just as bad as the guy at Northwestern or, you know, other people talking about fill the sleeves, but they don't know proper terminology as a strength coach. Like you're not helping the profession at all.
Yeah. I feel like those guys are like, I don't know. Obviously, there's some sort of rooted thing there, belief that's like, I'm the strength coach. We're the, you know, like we're supposed to be the guys who like get them ready to play. And part of that is getting them just lit to the gills on like adrenaline and excitement. And
but what happens when the strength coach isn't out there during the game? And that's what you always just try to remind them. Like, hey, y'all are going to be playing. Sure, we'll get like. Nobody likes to play. Like, I mean, come on, when you play in front of Kinnick and it's rocking and it's third down and they're playing the music, like, yeah,
it doesn't take much.
Right. Yeah. And so, but like, if you can add to that a little bit, like, yeah, you want to add to that, but like, you shouldn't be the main cause of it. Same thing in the weight room. Like today, the boys, you know, we had a great lift at Centennial and like, are we part of it by having the weight room set and the music loud and good music and and being excited? Yeah. 100%.
So short answer, it's about authenticity and balance.
Amen. Yep.
Yeah. I remember you on the broadcast playback of that Wisconsin game when CJ got hit out of bounds. You can see you on TV. You actually showed up on the TV copy quite a bit, I feel like.
Yeah, this is true. Coach Davis was busting my chops one time after, I think it was the Minnesota game.
You were involved. He got on you?
Well, in like a positive way, he's like, good catch over here by so-and-so. He's like, I'm pretty sure Justin Leem is excited down there on the sideline.
I think you got called out a couple times on like the Sunday film. Like, yeah. Hey, and here we go. Lima's going to tackle this guy right here. Yep. Pretty great. Nutrition. How much is a strength coach? What was that? Was that an Iowa State cup? Oh, no.
Just red.
What's in there? Liquor?
Greens, red, creatine, and collagen.
Tequila. collagen for the joint and bone health. How much is a, and we have, I have a, at some point we're going to just do an entire nutrition episode because I feel like, and you can answer it, but I feel like there's, you guys play a big role, obviously. How much is a strength coach responsible for also being almost, I mean, dietitian is a strong word, but you know, you're not licensed or anything like that, but a nutrition coach, a nutrition performance coach. I mean, it's, I don't know what to call it, but like how much responsibility do you guys have there?
Short answer. It depends on where you're working and the budget of the organization that you work with.
Yeah.
So higher levels, the Iowas, we're support. We don't really do as much. We shouldn't. So if you look around, like the way that it, the way that it's done really well. LSU football does a great job of it. TCU football does a great job of it. TCU football, one of their assistants, the head assistant, so the number two to Coach Cause, his name's Ryan Jackson, RJ. He's actually a registered dietitian, and so he helps organize all of the nutrition stuff. So if you don't have a full-time football nutritionist, that's a fantastic way to do it. LSU football, the head of nutrition, Dr. Matt Frakes, him and Jake Flint are like best friends. Their offices are right next to each other and the nutrition is there. So they work in collaboration, but then Jake is able to delegate it to Matt to do everything that Matt needs to do to get the creatine, get the, they had this one drink called Tiger Blood. It was just, it was beetroot.
Oh yeah.
Beetroot, collagen. So it's pre, right? And beta alanine. So it's like pre-training because it's going to get you the vasodilation, right? Like,
oh yeah. Oh yes. I'm about to take some in like 10 minutes because I'm going to the gym after this.
There you go. So that's the short answer. But like when I was at Towson and we had
at
one
Iowa,
nutritionist.
At but, Iowa, we didn't have a nutritionist.
No, yeah, but that was wrong. We should have. Like,
that's what I'm saying is I absolutely 100% believe it's the biggest miss in the world to not have a licensed or academic background person in nutrition for just the team.
Now, I thought that you have to take this with a grain of salt. There, I know the nutritionist on staff that worked at the University of Iowa, Tyler Bloom's wife, former player. Like, she's very qualified. Now, how much she's involved, I don't know. If I was in charge,
she when we would were be there, she involved. Wasn't involved at all. Like, there was nobody involved.
She was a new hire. But again, like, to think that we couldn't have afforded it, but that just comes back to lack of control, lack of wanting to give up control in an area. And that was the problem. Like, you have to truly be willing to give up control of something because we can support that person. But the same way a nutritionist shouldn't be talking about programming sets and reps.
Right.
We can support that person and support that decision, but it's nice to be able to delegate it and let them deal with it. But again, it's somebody that doesn't want to let go of control.
Yeah. I thought it was crazy. And the more I've gotten into, I have a couple nutrition certifications. I'm not a dietitian.
Precision nutrition or what?
I want to get the precision nutrition one, but I've got a couple other ones that don't matter as much. I know a lot about nutrition. Yep. All from just self-education, basically starting in 2015 when I started to like really track my own calories and get into it from like a nerdy personal level. I wasn't doing it for Doyle. My body weight was set. I wasn't trying to gain or lose weight. Ward and I just kind of got into it on our own, and it was part of our education. Like, we were exercise science majors, took some nutrition classes, but over the last 10 years, like, I feel like I've gotten a really good grasp on especially things that are relevant to football players, like gaining weight, body composition, and how nutrition factors into both of those things, hydration, a bunch of other stuff. And the body weight one is the big one that always comes back to my mind, because I'm like, man, there was this such a big effort in like getting a ton of these guys when they come into the program to put on weight, put on good weight, good size, right? But the specifics of that, at least from what I can tell, were very, very, very rarely communicated other than just you need to eat.
Correct.
Man, I felt like that was vague. Like, the more
I also didn't like, and I think you and I talked about this on Twitter one time, which, Lord forbid, people talk on Twitter. Like, it can be good. It was back when I was still at Towson, but you shouldn't only be allowed 2 pounds one way or the other, because 2 pounds to somebody that weighs 330 pounds is like
versus a guy who's 180.
Correct. And so what we did at Towson was we did 2%, 3%, 4%, and we graded it that way. So I really hope that it's not still just a 2 pound window either way, but we'll see.
Gonna fire me up. Gonna fire me up real good. Coach, that's fucking insane. 2 pound window.
Yeah.
With how fluid fluctuates and how much these guys are training. And we just expected these guys, me as one of them included. Luckily, I didn't have to deal with a ton of fluid loss during practice or like, but summer training sessions, I was sweating just as much or more than the other guys.
True.
2 pound, like the way that the body works and the what, like, if for anybody that's weighed themselves on a daily basis and you're not even a Division I athlete who's going through these crazy amounts of food that you're bringing in and fluid that you're you know, your body's producing to like cool you down. Like the fluctuations are nuts. And we just expected college kids who have a million other things to worry about to like fucking find this magic window.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. That's crazy. Wild. Better ways to do it. The nutrition podcast is a 4-hour long podcast.
I'm here for it.
Last one for today. And there's probably a million of these things. How much, and this kind of goes back to the getting into a little bit of the Doyle conversation and the discipline and mental tough. How much is mental resiliency, mental toughness, forging, creating that a part of the strength coach's role, the job?
Because
primarily you guys are there to program exercise and training and structure the workouts.
Yeah.
But there's a mental component to that of dealing with hard things. It's not just you're throwing cavemen out there, hey, do these sets. If it was, it'd be easy. Right? So how much is that, and where is the line on that?
It's in everything that we do, because yeah, we're going to program and you guys are going to train with us 5 days a week in the off season, 8 weeks. So that's 40 sessions. And to us, it's doing hard things like training is going to be difficult. You know that you're going to sprint. It's going to be timed. It's going to be competed. It's going to be percentages of your own one rep max. So if you are not taking care of your body, 80% is going to feel heavier than it should for the 6 reps. Yeah, you could have 2 reps in reserve, maybe 3 depending on the day. But if you're not taking care of your body, it's going to expose you. So mentally tough people do physically tough things on a regular basis because they take care of their body away from the facility. And it's just completely embedded, because any slapdick athlete, client, person can do something hard one time. It's not hard to be like, we're going to do the gauntlet. We're going to do this Navy SEAL training. And all you got to do is some stupid hard training session for 1 hour, maybe 2 hours. Y'all talk to each other, say, this is going to be a bunch of BS. We're going to deal with it. But that doesn't actually build resiliency. It's the stupid commercial where the guy slaps the big old, like the tape on the big hole in the tub. And he's like, oh, look, you know, it's like, oh, we have a big culture issue. Yeah. The Flexol. We're going to slap this mental toughness training session on a team. When it's like, no, to be mentally tough is to go through every day. You're going to show up early. You're going to get something in your body. You're going to eat when you train. You're going to eat after you train. You're going to take care of your body. You're going to go. It's the daily process of that off season, repeat it during the in season, repeat it in the off season again, and do that for 4 to 5 years. That requires a mentally tough person, not some, hey, take your shirt off, wear it as a bandana for this gauntlet training session.
We're going through.
The reason I use that word is they used to do that before I got to Towson. Like, so this, I'm
thinking of the Liver King. I don't know if you know who that is. The Liver King does the like full barbarian where he like holds, I think it's like 100-pound. It's based on your body weight, but you like pull on a sled. You have like ankle weights on. You hold 2 kettlebells and you like walk a mile in like with this. It's just like, mm-hmm. We're going to do the barbarian today.
When I got hired at Towson, the guy who was the assistant athletic director, he became associate athletic director. He's like, hey, you got to be ready for like, you know, these mat drills, things that we're going to do. I was like, Nathan, we're not doing them when I get there. I was like, I don't know what to tell. Like, he's like, you know, you got, I was like, Nathan, I don't know what to tell you. We're not doing it. Like, it's not happening. And we didn't. And he's like, how did you? I was like, Nathan, we're just not doing it. Like, I'm in charge of this. It's not happening.
And a lot of it, by the structure of what you're going to put the guys through, you're exposing them to that stimulus of it's going to require mental toughness, resiliency to get through this day after day.
Yep.
I love what you said about the repetitive nature and not only doing it once, but coming back and doing it every day. Because really the repetitiveness, consistency is ultimately the hardest thing on earth in anything.
And any of our listeners out there, you want to do something that's going to be harder. Like we talked about exercises before, sit on the Echo bike and pedal for 60 minutes. Tell me that is not mentally exhausting.
Come over to my house Thursday. We'll do it together.
There you go. I can rapid fire whatever other questions you have.
No. I'll just save some and I have to kind of get going too, but I think there's plenty of those. You kind of get where I'm going though. There's all these little things that like you guys have a hand in. That isn't necessarily part of the job title. Like when you Justin Lima turns in his application to be the head guy of the Towson program. It doesn't say under there, a bunch of these little specifics about nutrition. Maybe it doesn't say under these things like, here's the mental toughness side of the job. You're going to do this, this, and this to keep our guys mentally tough. It's just assumed. But when things are just assumed, there's like gray area. And then you have 100 different programs across the country, and it looks very different at each one. And to say it's done better at other places than some is an understatement. Like, there are people who do it great, and there are people who fucking maybe don't do it at all. So it's an interesting topic to me, because there's just, you guys have such a, there's a lot of responsibility. And I think to go over some of those other than just, hey, how many bench reps do I do today?
Like, here's that, another quick example the for the shit. Listeners out there is, there's a school in the ACC down south where they were very, very proud. The head strength coach is so proud of the tradition of mat drills that they do because of, you know, the tradition of this school and how it, you know, breeds these mentally tough kids that never make mistakes. Well, they're ranked in the preseason top five, and I'm pretty sure they have one win right now. And it's like, If doing mat drills turns people into robots that never make mistakes, then why are you losing to teams that don't have as much of a rich history as you? Like,
yeah, must be more mat drills. They're doing more.
Correct. And it's like, if it's so good to football, then how come you don't do it in season? Oh, wait, because it has nothing to do with football.
Yeah. It's just a lot of wasted energy and time spent on stuff that doesn't matter. And that's with everything, but cool. I love it. Good episode. I have nothing else. I'm going to go do
Friday game. You're listening to this in the air. Maybe you downloaded it. In the air, traveling to the Rose Bowl.
Out west. The Rose Bowl, baby. We need redemption.
Need it. Come on, boys.
Me and Justin need redemption.
Please, boys. Please.
Fuck. It was bad last time we were there. Man, it was good for about 14 seconds, and then it was bad. Really bad. Interesting spot. UCLA just got a big win against Nebraska. For them,
yeah.
Bad loss. Two completely different outlooks for those two teams in that game. Maybe it's a good spot to catch them. They're like riding high on a win. They go back home. Friday night game. It's supposed to be a decent atmosphere. Short week for the boys. There'll be Thursday travel day. It'll be a little bit different. They're kind of cooking right now, though. I like where they're at. I think this is a good game for the Hawks. If you're going out there tonight, enjoy that ball game, because this is part of the new Big Ten. So that's what we're doing. You'll hear our recap of that game. Gosh, I suppose we could do it on Saturday and put it out early. We probably won't, though. Kevin never shows up to the episodes anyway. You'll hear us next week when we recap all the programming, all the walk-ons, all the time. We'll see you then. Peace. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.